Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI. Let's get it going. This is Late Night right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Yes, thanks, Aaron. You know, once in a while in the locker room, Tom had to put his foot down on me, you know, control me a little bit, yell at me, get that scream going. But let me tell you something about Julian. First off, he calls himself the squirrel. You want to know why he calls himself the squirrel? Because he is a squirrel. He's furry. He's furry. He's cute. He's elusive. He's feisty. And most importantly, whenever he gets a chance, he gets that nut. Just like he gets a first down. Just like he gets the touchdown. Just like he'll give you a catch when you need it.
Yeah.
All right, that was Rob Gronkowski tonight making his debut on Fox. It sounded more like he was making his debut in the WWE or whatever that new wrestling league is now than he was making his debut as an actual NFL analyst. That's what it came across to as me, is he's getting ready to wrestle or something along those lines. But nonetheless, it was entertaining. 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next 90 minutes or so. We're at halftime of the Patriots game, by the way. They lead the Giants right now 21-14. The offense has been atrocious so far in this football game. Now, Rob Gronkowski is out there at halftime doing his analyst work. Now, that's somebody they could certainly use right now, because this offense at this particular point in time, just not good enough. Brady on the day so far, 17 of 24, 192, no touchdowns. He does have the interception. So that's now three consecutive games that Tom Brady has had an interception. And I will say this with Brady. So Tom Brady over the past couple of weeks, and we've referenced it and we've played the sound about him being frustrated with the tight end position, him being frustrated with the receiver position, and you can understand why. But it seems like a lot of Brady's energy, who Brady, remember, he's like the most positive person ever, right? He thinks about the positives in life all the time, right? I mean, he talks about that book that he reads, he's read in the past or whatever. So he's really a positive person, but he's been really negative. He's been really cranky. He's been pouty over the past couple of weeks. And I'm wondering if part of that energy that he's expending in terms of worrying about the receivers, worrying about the tight ends, is actually taking a toll on Brady. It's taking some energy out of Brady because, quite frankly, Tom Brady himself, and we can make excuses for Brady, the line isn't great, the receivers aren't great right now, they got to upgrade at that position. I'm certainly on board with all that, but I think we have to acknowledge the fact as well that the quarterback through the past 3 weeks has not been playing up to his standards either. Brady has not been good. You go back to the Bills game, that was an absolutely horrible interception in the end zone. And maybe last week you could make the argument that the one against the Redskins was worse. The one where that was almost an Eli Manning-like interception. Eli Manning is on the sidelines now with the Giants, of course, as Daniel Jones has taken his job. And Daniel Jones, by the way, two interceptions on the night. There was a play last week in the game that reminded me of Eli Manning, where Brady just did not want to take the hit. He threw the ball up in the air to James White. Apparently, he's trying to get him on a wheel route, and he just completely underthrew James White to the point where the Redskins picked it off right before the end zone. So back-to-back weeks where Brady had interceptions in the red zone. And again, he had another interception tonight where he just was not on the same page with the receiver whatsoever. So we should acknowledge the fact that, yes, there's a lack of weaponry here. There's a lack of artillery on the outside for Tom Brady. But we should also mention the fact that Tom Brady, quite frankly, hasn't been holding up his end of the bargain either. It's not exactly like Brady's been great to begin the season. And look, I don't have any doubts about Brady. I'm not worried about Brady's. I don't feel like he's showing his age or anything along those lines, because we're going to hear a lot of that tomorrow on First Take from Max Kellerman and Shannon Sharp on FS1, whatever his show is called with Skip Bayless. They're going to take shots at Tom Brady. I'm not worried about the player in terms of, I don't see anything from a physical perspective where it's like, oh, Brady can't make this throw or that throw. I just believe it's a lack of weapons. And because he has a lack of weapons, I think it's taken a toll on Tom Brady so far this season, where, think about it, we're now in the sixth game of the season and Brady still does not have cohesion with the receivers. There's still not that element where this looks like a well-oiled machine. And we've been used to it over the past couple of years where it didn't really matter. Brady was always going to get this offense going. And right now, It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen until they make a move externally. But think about yourself if you're Tom Brady, or think about it from Brady's angle. He's now 42. He's technically in the walk year of his contract, right? If he really wanted to, after this season, he could go walk to whatever destination he wants to walk to, whether it be Tennessee to play for his old buddy Mike Vrabel or wherever he would want to go. He could make that decision to leave the Patriots to go somewhere else. He's in his walk year. He's 42 years old. He wants to get more hardware. That's why he's still playing in the NFL. And right now, he's put in a position to not succeed at the level he wants to succeed at because he doesn't have the guys around him. And this is now 2 years in a row where it has to aggravate Brady. Because last year, I understand that you could morph into this running game, and eventually you figured it out offensively, and Brady was fine with it because at the end of the season, he's hoisting another Lombardi trophy. But for a large majority of that season, Brady was aggravated and he was frustrated with the lack of weapons he had to work with. And now we're in the same position this year, except the difference between last year, when you compare it to this year, is you don't have that dominant running game that you once had. Because right now, if you look at it in this game, Sony Michel, 28 yards on 11 carries. You want to do the math on that? I'm not going to do the math, so I'm just going to look at the stat. 2.5 yards per carry. That's it. 2.5 yards per carry. Oh, he has a nice long run of 7 yards in this game. When this team was in a 4th-and-1 situation tonight at the beginning of the game, their first drive, they went for it on 4th-and-1, which they should do, but Sony Michel couldn't pick up the first down. Now, it's not all on him. It's on the offensive line as well, because this offensive line has not been up to the standards that we've become accustomed to with Patriots offensive lines, right? It looks more like the Patriots offensive line in 2015, the year that Brady was getting killed and Dante Scarnecchia was not a member of the organization. It looks like that compared to the line that the Patriots had last year that was one of the more dominant units in the NFL, especially when it came to the running game. So Brady doesn't even have that to fall back on right now. So this is now 6 weeks and 3 weeks in particular where Brady's been really, really aggravated with the offense. I don't know what other evidence this team's going to need to point to say, okay, we need to upgrade in terms of what we have on the outside and what Tom Brady has to work with. By the way, Josh Gordon left this game, looked like he was dealing with a sore knee, and he was dealing with a sore knee coming in to the game tonight. Now, I did see him on the bike, and it looks like he's going to return. So maybe Josh Gordon dealing with a little bit of an injury as he was banged up coming into this game. But Josh Gordon, by the way, it looks like he's going to be fine. He did come back. He never really left the sidelines. He did come out of the game, and basically he was chasing down a player after Brady got sacked, fumbled. So we'll keep you updated to see if Josh Gordon comes back onto the field in the second half of the game. But the one bright spot, if you want to look at it from a Patriots perspective tonight, the only bright spot I look at so far in this game is the fact that Jacoby Myers, somebody else got involved in the receiving game. Myers so far tonight, he has 3 catches for 53 yards. He did have 1 catch that extended that final drive where it put the Patriots into position to score a touchdown, rather, at the end of the half there. So I will give Jacoby Myers credit. At least him and Tom Brady, it looks like they've developed some sort of chemistry. And on 3 targets tonight, he has 3 receptions. But again, this is going to continue to be a problem for the Patriots until they upgraded the receiver position. And we're going to continue to see an aggravated quarterback who, at the age of 42, he must be thinking to himself, I want real weapons out here, so we're not basically what's holding this team back. Because right now, if this Patriots team is not going to win a Super Bowl, it's going to be because they don't have a competent passing game. And if they fall behind in a game, they're not going to have the ability to come back because they don't have the proper weapons around a 42-year-old quarterback. You would think at this point, and I understand they had Antonio Brown, at this point, you would be trying to enhance Brady with the weapons around him, not the other way around. And right now, Brady's trying to get the most out of a rookie in Jacoby Myers and a guy in Josh Gordon that hasn't been consistent whatsoever. 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you up until the real postgame show with Glenn Ordway and company. Let's check in with Vin. He's in Portland. What's up, Vin?
Hi, Brian. How are you? Thanks so much for doing the show today. I'm out on the West Coast watching the game, and I can't help but notice you're right about the weapons, lack of weapons. The only thing that worries me is even if you had the weapons, what about the pass protection? It reminds me of the Super Bowl against the Giants. They had weapons. They had Welker. They had Randy Moss, you know, but all of a sudden, because the pass rush, you know, Izzo did a horrible job in blocking that outside lineman, and that led to the fumble. So
yeah, and Vin, you know, Lacoste, in terms of like Pro Football Focus, ranks all the tight ends each and every week in terms of the pass blocking, and he's been like the worst tight end in the NFL in terms of blocking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he must be hurt because he's not playing many downs tonight, is he? It's been mostly Izzo.
Yeah, no, I mean Izzo, excuse me, Izzo. He's been ranked as like the worst blocking tight end in the NFL. Sorry, excuse me, I misspoke there.
Well, this is O'Brien, right? I could clearly see, I was like, who beat the lineman to come on the backside to cause that fumble? And I looked, and sure enough, it was Izzo. So either he's not a good enough blocker, or they got to get somebody, some secondary, maybe one of the running backs, to give a little help on that side. Otherwise, you know, that's the blind side, and, you know, it'll happen again.
Yeah, and that's the issue, Vin, because, like, the question you would have about this offense right now is, what do they do well? And it's nothing. There's nothing you can point to right now with this Patriots offense and say they do this well.
Well, if they get pass protection, I think, you know, they can certainly move the ball down the field. Like that last score before the halftime, they were able to move it downfield. But that's because you had pass protection. If they don't have pass protection, then that means they got to force the run. And if they force the run, the Giants can stop that.
Fair enough. I appreciate the phone call, Vin. If you want to grab his line, you can. It's 617-779-7937. Look, it's a fair point when you look at Brady in terms of the protection. It has not been up to the standard that we've been accustomed to here over the past couple of years, especially since Dante Scarnecchia came back. They've had really good offensive lines, especially last year. They had a really good offensive line. Now, you can't account for David Andrews going down before the season with a blood clot issue. You can't expect that a guy like James Devlin, who helps you in the running game, is going to go down with a serious neck injury. You can't expect that your left tackle Isaiah Wynn is going to get injured again, right? Ever since they took Wynn in the draft out of Georgia, the guy's been a non-contributor. Now, it looked like for the first game and a half that he was actually on the football field, he's going to be good. But again, they got to get this guy back, and they got to get him back into the fold, because right now what the Patriots offense has is they don't have a strength. There's really not a strength in this team whatsoever. You can't pass block, so Brady's not having time to throw the football. You don't have a lot of good weapons on the outside to begin with, and you can't run the football. So it's all those things combined that have led to the ineptitude of the offense right now. Now, the good thing is this Patriots defense is all world right now. You can make a real convincing argument, and by the numbers, they are the best defense in the NFL. They're only giving up, what, 6.8 points per game heading into this game. And if you look at it, the defense itself is actually giving up less points than that. The defense itself is giving up about 4 points per game, because in one game you had a pick six from Jarrett Stidham. You also had a special teams touchdown. So there's all that that factors into it. So the defense has been all world. So the good thing for the Patriots is the defense is there. And that's always been kind of a question in this more recent group of Patriots. Now, they had a really good defense last year. And in 14, they stepped up at the end of the game. You think about 2016, they had a pretty good defense. And they always somehow rank in the top 10. But this is a downright dominant defense. And oh, by the way, speaking of that defense, the Patriots up 21-14. Third quarter's just underway, and another interception for the Patriots. This time it was Stephon Gilmore with a pick. So the Patriots already have 3 interceptions in this football game. 3 interceptions. I almost feel bad. I really do. I almost feel bad for Daniel Jones, because this defense is so downright nasty right now. I almost feel bad for Daniel Jones. He has no chance tonight. He has no chance whatsoever tonight to succeed. He already has 3 interceptions in the football game. And that back to my point about the offense. How are the Patriots only up 21-14? Now, hopefully Brady and company go down the field the next time they get the ball, which they're about to in just a couple of minutes here. Hopefully they go down the field to make it a 28-14 game. But you have a special teams touchdown, and you have 3 interceptions. And right now, the Patriots only have a 7-point lead over the New York Giants. One thing I would mention with the defense as well, I'm wondering this. For some of these guys that have been around this program for a while, been around this team for a while, I have to imagine that they are really relishing this opportunity, right? Where they want to go down as one of the great defenses of all time. Because one of the things that people have been doing over the past couple of weeks, and myself included a little bit, is poo-pooing the opponents, right? Who have they really played? They're playing Daniel Jones tonight. They've played Ryan Fitzpatrick. They've played Josh Rosen. They've played Colt McCoy. They've played Josh Allen and Matt Barkley. And Ben Roethlisberger with an elbow that wasn't functioning, right? So if you look at it from that perspective, it's not exactly like they've been playing the Rams from all those years ago or the Rams last year. They haven't played the Chiefs. They haven't played any good offenses yet. But I have to imagine there's some level of this defense wanting to go down with some of those all-time great defenses, the 2000 Ravens, the 1985 Bears, right? They want to have the stats they can put up with those teams. Now, that's all going to be dictated on what they do against the premier opponents on the schedules, the Chiefs of the world, the Texans of the world, those teams, the Cowboys, the Eagles. What do they do when they play those type of opponents that actually have a competent offense? That's when we'll find out how good and how dominant this Patriots defense really is. But I have to imagine from their perspective, after all these years, especially the guys that have been here forever, right? Devin McCourty, Dante Hightower, etc. I have to imagine with those guys, Patrick Chung, right? Daron Harmon's been here for a long time. With those guys, I have to imagine that part of them wants a championship to be remembered for the defense. Now, you can look to last year with the Rams Super Bowl. But even the Rams Super Bowl, like, we give credit to the defense. It was great. But it feels like, to me, that was more about Belichick, right? Belichick gets the credit for the Super Bowl last year because he came up with a game plan that completely shook Sean McVay. They had no idea how to do it. Remember, they were lining up like six guys at the line of scrimmage and they could never figure it out. So that became more about Belichick and his game planning than it did the actual players on the field, right? That's what kind of happened in that Super Bowl. And this is the year where the Patriots defense can put the stamp on a Super Bowl and them being the reason why, if they make a deep run. And I have to imagine, with guys like Devin McCourty and Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung, guys that I mentioned that have been here for a long time, we think about this recent dynasty with the Patriots, we always point to the offense, right? We point to Brady. We point to Rob Gronkowski, who is a national celebrity now. We point to a guy like Julian Edelman, who is significantly more famous than any of the guys on the defensive side of the football. And I'm not dismissing those guys, saying they shouldn't have that type of love and that type of appeal, if you will, and that type of following, because they clearly deserve it. Edelman was the Super Bowl MVP. Gronk has arguably been the best tight end in the history of the sport. Now, not in terms of the overall numbers, but in terms of just pure dominance for a 9-year period, whatever it was, you can make the argument he's the most dominant tight end of all time. So clearly those guys deserve the credit. But if you're a member of that defense, Devin McCourty's been a captain of this football team for a long time. He's been one of the best safeties in the NFL. It seems like Devin McCourty and those guys on the defense have never gotten the love that some of the premier defenders got in the first Patriots dynasty, the Brewskis, Willie McGinnis, Ty Law. And this could be the opportunity for this Patriots defense to put the stamp on the dynasty, where the team is remembered for the defense and Devin McCourty and those type of guys get a little more love than they have in the past. So I would also imagine this too. Part of what I'm saying today about the fact that, oh, well, they haven't really played anybody from an offensive perspective. Let's see what they do against the Cowboys, and not that Dak's this all-world quarterback, but let's see what they do against Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. Let's see what they do against Carson Wentz, and let's see what they do against Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes, right? So I'm sure that's motivating these guys, right? Where they can have the bulletin board material is, hey, everybody in the media is saying you're not playing anybody. Everybody's saying you're not playing anybody anymore. And that motivates them even more to go out tonight. Like, three interceptions in this game tonight. Daniel Jones has no idea whatsoever. This defense is the most dominating Patriots defense I've seen. Now, I understand that back in 04, they had an outstanding defense, 03, 01, all that stuff. And still, to be the greatest Patriots defense of all time, they're going to have to get it done in the postseason, because that's how we, quite frankly, judge this organization, is what happens when you get to the big games, right? Because it's almost like the Patriots have a two-game season, the AFC Championship game and then the Super Bowl. That's really the way that we measure the Patriots at this particular point in time. So you're going to need this defense to step up in those type of games. But it is kind of weird how it's morphed back to the defense, right? Because it's kind of how this thing all started with Belichick all those years ago in 2001 when they upset the Rams in that Super Bowl when Brady was essentially just a game manager. Now it's almost like you're back to that, where this defense is completely dominant. But I would trade the defense being like good for the offense just getting back on track a little bit. Like, if the defense, I understand, like, it's fun watching this dominant defense and it's different for Patriots fans, but I find myself more aggravated and more frustrated with this team than I was back in the days when, remember in the early part of this decade when the Patriots didn't have a good defense, but they were lighting up the scoreboard. Remember in 2011, they had, like, at that time, it was the worst defense to make it to a Super Bowl, whatever the case may be. Remember in 2011, their defense was horrible. I find myself more aggravated and more frustrated watching the Patriots right now with this absolutely atrocious offense, this anemic offense, than I did back in the early part of the decade when they just had a horrible defense. But at least Tom Brady and company were putting up 30, 35 points per game or whatever was required to win that particular game on that Sunday. I was fine with it because it was fun watching the Patriots offense. This is just something that is really tough to watch because we're not used to it. I love watching the defense, don't get me wrong, but what aggravates me and what annoys me is watching this offense and they can't move the ball whatsoever, and they can't take advantage of a game right now where they're struggling with the Giants up 21-14, and the defense has already turned over Daniel Jones three times in this football game, and they've gotten a special teams touchdown, and they're in a game with the New York Giants, who, by the way, let me remind you, the Giants right now are 30th in the NFL, 30th in total defense, and this Patriots offense right now, with the greatest quarterback in the history of the sport, is struggling to move the football and struggling to pick up a rhythm offensively against this New York Giants team. They can't block them. They're not moving the ball consistently. Brady has a bad interception. When you need to pick up a 4th-and-1 with a running back that you spent a first-round pick on, he couldn't pick it up. So right now, this offense, and I said at the beginning of this show tonight that we couldn't really learn anything about this Patriots team. But what we've learned is the glaring issue with this team right now, which is the offense and lack of weapons on the outside. That's becoming even more clear than it was before the game. The only thing you can take away from this game is negative stuff, and that negative stuff is what's going on with the offense right now. So 21-14 right now, the Patriots lead the Giants. Daniel Jones in this game, have you seen his numbers? My word. 10 of 17 for a buck 40. He has one touchdown, three interceptions so far in the day. Three interceptions. Incredible. Daniel Jones. Jeez. I almost feel bad for him. I thought that they should have started Eli today. Start Eli and say, hey, Eli, you've beat the Patriots twice. Maybe if we put Eli out there, we can get into the Patriots' heads a little bit. And Eli, you can announce your retirement tomorrow. So you can get out there, you can start today, and then tomorrow you can say, you know what? I'm done. Enough's enough. Imagine that moment for Eli Manning. Eli tonight's probably like, okay, kid, you get out there. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with this game. Good luck. Good luck against that defense. I'm kidding. I really don't think the Giants should have started Eli, but it would have been appropriate if they did, considering the back and forth that these teams have had over the years, especially the Patriots losing two Super Bowls to these guys. All right, the number is 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on board. Your takeaways from the game thus far, if you want to weigh in on Rob Gronkowski making his debut as an analyst, certainly welcome to do so. And we'll get you trending in just a second here on WEI.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Who can sleep when there's so much Boston sports to talk about? This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, if you want to join us, certainly welcome to do so. The number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so, taking you up until the real postgame show with Glenn Ordway and company. Right now, the Patriots a 21-14 lead over the New York Giants. Third quarter, you got about 3 minutes left in this one. Brady so far, 25 of 34, 239 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception. So we'll definitely keep you glued to that one as the night goes on. And oh, by the way, we should mention this. As the Patriots are just driving the football, it looked like they were putting together a nice drive. Well, then guess what happened at the end of the drive? Mike Nugent, or according to Robert Kraft before the game, he calls him Matt Nugent. Thought his name was Matt Nugent. It's Mike Nugent, and he just missed a field goal. So this is all great for the Patriots. I mean, the offense has been horrible tonight, to put it lightly. And now the kicker, and that was a concern at the beginning of the season, and later we found out that Gostkowski was dealing with an injury. But now Mike Nugent, last week, he missed, what, a field goal in that game or a PAT in that game. And tonight, he's hitting it off the side of the goalposts. Not exactly the ideal game that you want to see from the Patriots. Hey, this is a horrible performance by the Patriots, offensively, rather, and now the kicker's messing up. I mean, this is just bad. It is some bad news for the Patriots. The defense has been downright dominant. Downright dominant. You got three interceptions. You got a touchdown on special teams. And yet the Patriots only lead the Giants 21-14. Brady and company, the offense has only put up 14 points in this particular football game, and one of those touchdown drives was basically set up by an interception. So right now, the Patriots' offense has just looked more like a joke than it's looked at any point this season. The Bills have a legitimate defense. That's a good defense. This is the 30th-ranked defense in the NFL, and the Patriots can't move the football whatsoever. So they need to make a move like 2 weeks ago for a receiver. That needs to happen now. They need to get at least another receiver in here to at least try to fix some of these issues, because right now they have too many issues in terms of the offense right now. The line can't block. They can't run the football. They can't pass protect. Brady's got one reliable target in terms of the receiving core, which is Julian Edelman. By the way, I do want to get to some Red Sox stuff. So if you watched the game last night, we were in here for it, and the Dodgers end up blowing that game to the Nationals after having a 3-1 lead. What a choke job by Clayton Kershaw. It's unbelievable. That guy has been arguably the best pitcher of his generation, yet he can never get it done in the postseason. His regular season numbers, absolutely remarkable. Even a guy like David Price has gotten it done in the postseason. David Price got it done in the postseason, and Clayton Kershaw still can't get through. He still can't get over that hump. And usually in sports, all these guys that struggle in the postseason that are all-time greats. I'm talking about Peyton Manning. He had that MO that he couldn't do it in the postseason and eventually did. Came back from, what, 21 points down against the Patriots. LeBron James, eventually he got himself his ring. It just seems like it's never going to work out for Clayton Kershaw, not to mention the fact that the manager last night, Dave Roberts, put him in a position to fail. Dave Roberts put him out there in the eighth inning. After he got them out of the seventh inning, he gives up back-to-back home runs to Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon. I mean, what a choke job again by Clayton Kershaw. But how about the fact that Dave Roberts, in that game last night, he never got to Kenley Jansen. Joe Kelly's out there for two innings last night. We watched the Red Sox last year. You know you can only pitch Joe Kelly for an inning? I don't know what the hell Dave Roberts was thinking last night, but what an atrocious job from a managerial perspective last night. But more in particular, as it pertains to the Red Sox. So Andrew Friedman's contract is technically up with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And everybody thinks that he's going to re-sign with the Dodgers. But Rob Bradford had an interesting article up at WEI.com. By the way, has anybody checked on Bradford? Because that's his guy, Joe Kelly. I don't know how he's handling Joe Kelly just getting banged up last night. I hope Rob's okay. He put out this article, so I assume he's okay. But nonetheless, it's a really good article by Rob Bradford today on WEI.com. He had this to say about the Red Sox and what they should do with their GM search, president search, and it pertains to the Andrew Friedman situation. Quote, if the Red Sox don't make a Billy Bean-like push toward reeling in Friedman, then they aren't going to be doing this the right way. He also writes, it's one thing to do it in Tampa with a small market team, referring to Friedman, because, of course, he was with the Rays originally, with the hope that the same philosophies will carry over to a big market club. But to use the resources a team like the Dodgers have maintained while successfully building enough of an infrastructure that allows for an on-the-fly rebuild, that's a rare commodity. It's exactly the kind of skill set the Red Sox are starving for. Now, I completely agree with Bradford on this. If the Red Sox have an opportunity, if they get any inkling that you're in a situation where Andrew Friedman would be willing to come to the Red Sox, you sign that guy up and you pay whatever it costs to get that guy. And I understand you can say, all right, this team has had some shortcomings in the postseason, etc. But if you look at that team on paper, they are one of the most talented teams in baseball year after year. They've won the division, what, five consecutive seasons. They have an unbelievable major league team. And Bradford points out in the article, right now the Dodgers have the third best farm system in all of Major League Baseball, according to MLB.com. So if you look at what the Red Sox need right now, they need to keep the big league club good and, of course, get to good now because this past season they sucked. But they got to get back on track in terms of the big league club, and they need to basically upgrade the farm system because although the farm system has improved as this season went on, it got better in terms of the rankings depending on which ranking you look at, whether it's Baseball America, MLB.com. The Red Sox did improve as the season went on because some of the young guys in the farm system, etc. But they're still a long way away from being one of the better units in or one of the better farm systems in baseball, which they were for a number of years when Theo Epstein was here. And really, when Dave Dombrowski came here, they had one of the best farm systems in baseball. Now most of those guys are up with the big club. So it would make perfect sense if you could get Andrew Friedman in here because you know his philosophy works to build a winner. Now, you can criticize some of the way they handle things in the playoffs with their pitching staff, and maybe they get a little bit too analytical, and certainly that could be the case last night in that series for the Dodgers, so certainly there's some of that, but for the most part, he's built up an absolute juggernaut, and Andrew Friedman comes in with such a big reputation that there would be no concerns about who's in charge. It would be him calling all the shots, but I look at it from this perspective in terms of I completely agree with Bradford. You should go after this guy. You should make it abundantly clear that you'll pay him whatever he wants because you desperately need a guy like this. Because all the other premier organizations have a guy like this. You look at a team like the Astros, they get Jeff Luhnow doing it. He's built up a great farm system, and he's able to make great moves like trading for Garrett Cole, who just won tonight, by the way, against the Rays. And a guy like Justin Verlander a couple of years ago, where everybody thought he was done. So they've been able to do this in terms of going out there getting assets or getting players that can contribute to the everyday lineup and the pitching staff, and they've had homegrown talent. The combination of those things. You look at the Dodgers, they have it with Friedman. If you can get Friedman here, then you have that guy where you're looking at yourself and you're saying, all right, we have one of the best executives in the sport right now. So that would be massive for the Red Sox. I just look at it, though, as it's a pipe dream. And it wasn't like Bradford was saying that he thinks it's going to happen. In all likelihood, Andrew Friedman's going to end up back with the Los Angeles Dodgers. But the thing that stuck out to me with all this should be one of the more appealing jobs in Major League Baseball. And quite frankly, it's not right now. And if you look at it just from Friedman's angle, he's built up this thing in Los Angeles where he's been there since 2014. And if you look at what he has at his disposal as you head into the offseason, they're looking to add pieces to put them over the top to try to ultimately get over that hump, which the Dodgers have not been able to do, and they have the financial ability to go out in the open market, and if they want, a guy that played his college baseball at UCLA, they could go sign Gerrit Cole to a massive contract right now. Okay, and if you think about it, the best position player in Major League Baseball that's going to become a free agent this year is Anthony Rendon. If the Dodgers really wanted to, they could sign both those guys because they have that type of money. But the one thing that Friedman has done is he stayed away from those big bloated contracts. But if he really wanted to, he could sign Gerrit Cole to a big long-term contract to say, all right, I can put Gerrit Cole behind Walker Buehler in my postseason rotation and the rest is history. We feel like we're winning a World Series that way. So the fact that he has those options available are appealing. And with the Red Sox, what you look at with this job right now, you think about the situation you're inheriting right now just in Boston in terms of the personnel. So first of all, with the personnel, you have three pitchers in Eovaldi, Sale, and Price that they're all massive question marks going forward. So Sale's in a situation where he signed through, what, his 36-year-old season. David Price, very similar, and those guys are making close to $30 million per season. And Sale starts his five-year extension next year. Price has still got, what, 4 years remaining on his deal. And if you look at a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, he's got three more years at $17 million per season. So first of all, you inherit a pitching staff that you're not so sure how good it's going to be in the future and if those guys can get back on track. And then with the Red Sox, and I understand that in the past, ownership has been willing to pay and they had the highest payroll in Major League Baseball this year. But if you look at it in terms of the long term right now, what the Red Sox want to do is they want to cut payroll, right? So the first thing that you're going to do as an executive if you take over the Red Sox is you have to decide whether or not to trade a guy that was the American League MVP 2 years ago. So how is that attractive from a personnel standpoint? If I'm Andrew Friedman, I'm like, I'm good. Okay, I understand that it's the Red Sox, etc., but this thing I got going in L.A., pretty good right now. Pretty good right now, okay? I don't want to inherit a team with a financial mess and a bunch of bad bloated contracts, which specifically Andrew Friedman has stayed away from the bloated contracts. Sale's got a horrible contract. Price has a horrible contract. And Eovaldi has a horrible contract. So from that perspective, what would appeal to Andrew Friedman with coming to the Red Sox in terms of the personnel? Absolutely nothing. Now, secondarily, think about this. Buster Olney had the report a couple of weeks ago. There's a perception around Major League Baseball that this is a bad atmosphere to work in, meaning the Red Sox organization, which makes total sense. If you think about this, Ben Sherrington and Dave Dombrowski, the year after they won World Series, the team moved on from them as the president of baseball operations, if you will, the main signal caller, if you will, in the organization. Dave Dombrowski just won a World Series less than a year ago. Ben Sherrington won the World Series in 2013. They wanted to move on from him. And look, I'm not defending all the moves those guys made. You've heard me multiple times. I've been very critical of the moves that Dave Dombrowski made. And if you're going to rebuild and if you want to do it the way the Red Sox want to do in terms of they want to cut payroll, etc., Dave Dombrowski's probably not the right guy for the job. Okay, but if I just look at that, just think about that. If you're an executive looking to take this Red Sox job, what's good enough for them? What's good enough for that organization? How is that appealing to another executive? Oh, well, I won a World Series, and then I'm fired. Oh, I won a World Series, then I'm fired. Ben Sherrington, Dave Dombrowski. And I get technically Sherrington wasn't fired, but they said, hey, we're bringing in a guy to take your job. You can still stay around with the organization, but you're not going to be calling the shots anymore. It's going to be somebody else doing your job. How would you feel if you're Ben Sherrington? How would you feel if you're Dave Dombrowski? So when you're trying to appeal to some of these big-name guys across Major League Baseball, some of these big executives, what the hell is appealing about your job? From a personnel standpoint and from an economic standpoint, from a payroll standpoint, this team is an absolute mess. And then if you look at it from a working environment standpoint, what exactly is great about the Red Sox right now? And what exactly is good enough for them? It's amazing to me the amount of success this organization has been able to have with the way they function. They've won four World Series in, what, the past 15 years. They've had three different managers and three different president of baseball operations, if you will. Theo Sherrington Dombrowski, okay? Tito Francona, John Farrell, and Alex Cora. You continue to change the managers. You continue to change the front office. So why would somebody want to come in here and say, yeah, that's the job for me? Especially considering where the situation is right now. For Dave Dombrowski, it was very appealing at the time. Because you think about it, you knew that you were set up with this unbelievable farm system, and they were telling you, hey, we want to win now. So this is what Dave Dombrowski does best. Let me make some trades. I'll get this team into World Series caliber mode, if you will. And, oh, yeah, you can let me spend money. It was appealing to Dave Dombrowski because he's like, all right, I can sign a guy like Price. I can make a trade for a guy like Sale. I can go after a guy like Kimbrel. I already have all these guys in the farm system. I have a loaded major league roster with a lot of young players. Okay, that's appealing. But now? But now? What's appealing about this to, like, a big executive across Major League Baseball? That's why I look at this in terms of the Red Sox getting rid of Dombrowski. And I'm not saying it was the wrong move, but what's the next move? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. What's the next move? What's the answer? And still, we have no idea what the answer is going to be for this team in terms of their long-term success. This was an organization last year that Alex Spear just had the write-up in the Boston Globe. The analytical department didn't get along with the pitching coach. Okay, they couldn't agree on the plan of attack to the point where Alex Spear noted in his article in the Boston Globe, they were spending too much time arguing and less time coaching the players. Think about that. You had such a argument within the organization in terms of the principles and how they wanted to attack hitters that it was causing so much friction that it was taking away from the pitching coach and people within the organization actually working and coaching the players. Think about how dysfunctional that is. This is a year after they won the World Series. It's unbelievable. All right, if you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. What did you make of Rob Gronkowski's debut on television tonight? What do you make of this Patriots offense? How badly do they need to get a weapon? And if you want to weigh in on this Red Sox situation, what an absolute mess. What do you want to see them do with the front office? Brian Barrett with you up until the real postgame show right here on WEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Who can sleep when there's so much Boston sports to talk about? This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
Tom, you also always tell us the football.
This winter, do you need to get some sense about whether he can be extended before making some decisions? And are you at all troubled by some quotes of his that would seem to indicate that no matter what, he's going to go to free agency and see what the market has?
Well, we've had stated publicly that we would hope that he would stay with us for the rest of his career. You know, we have made proposals to him in the past, and he did want to test free agency, which is his right. And we'll have some conversations with him going forward. But obviously, you know, there'll be a point where hopefully we can make a deal, or we'll decide at that point, you know, what is plan B or plan C. But we haven't gotten to that point, and we're very open to continuing the discussions with him.
All right, that's Tom Warner on the status of Mookie Betts and what the team's going to do with Mookie this offseason. By the way, I talked with Bob Nightingale from USA Today earlier today. He's doing an interview on my other show with Bob Nightingale, and he said that he thinks the Red Sox will actually hold on to Mookie Betts. Thinks they'll hold on to him for the reason that they're not going to get much from him because essentially it's a one-year rental. Well, I would say this. Something is better than nothing, because when Mookie Betts hits the market after next season, you're going to get a compensatory draft pick, and that's it. So do you want to get something for Mookie Betts, meaning a couple of prospects and maybe some guys that can contribute to the major league roster, or do you want to get nothing for him, meaning a compensatory pick in a couple of years? To me, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You might as well go out there and get something for him if he's not giving you a commitment long term. Because the reality is, not just in Major League Baseball, but in sports in general, guys that get to free agency, they leave. That's what happens. You get to free agency, you leave. So it would be malpractice if the Red Sox don't get something for Mookie Betts. And it's not as if the player is giving you an indication he wants to stay. Okay, now I understand if people want to, or well, Mookie wants to be here. You don't want to pay him $30 million per season. That's a different argument because we haven't heard that Mookie wants to be here. Mookie tries to go out of his way to say essentially like, oh, I love Boston. I never said I didn't want to be here. Yeah, but you said you want to test free agency, which means in all likelihood, you don't want to be here. Guys that want to be with their current organizations, you know what they do? It's this crazy thing. It's called they sign a contract extension. Like Mike Trout with the Angels. Like Alex Bregman with the Astros. Like Nolan Arenado with the Rockies. Those guys that want to be with their team, they end up signing long-term contract extensions. So by Mookie's behavior, even though he's not blatantly say, hey, I'm definitely leaving, he is telling you by his actions, he is telling you by his behavior that he's leaving. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Andre on the Cape. What's up, Andre?
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. For me, the issue with the Red Sox has nothing to do with the analytics department and the pitching coach. This has to do with leadership and all the way at the top.
Wait, but Andre, hold on one second. That was an issue, though. I mean, if you have an analytical department and the pitching coach isn't getting along with the analytical department and they're arguing in terms of the game plan to go up against opposing lineups, that is an issue. If there's an internal argument all season long, that's an issue.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and it reflects the overall leadership, which is my point. John Henry has become George Steinbrenner, okay? His mishandling of his baseball people, him not allowing his baseball people to have autonomy and make decisions. Okay, so the analytics people and the base pitching people are having an issue. Guess what?
Yeah.
This is what happened with the Dodgers. This happens in all of these organizations. They're battling back and forth, the numbers people and the on-the-ground people. All right, if you give your baseball people autonomy to – this should be something that Alex Cora or Dave Dombrowski squashes and makes a decision. Either we're going this way or we're going that way. And whoever doesn't want to get in line, you're gone. Okay, that's how these internal between your assistants are handled. And for John Henry at the very top, not to empower his baseball people. Listen, the Yankees did not have success until George Steinbrenner was banished from baseball for a couple of years for putting the private detectives on his best player, whose name escapes me right now. And when he came back, what did he do? He let his baseball people make baseball decisions. And that's how you got that championship team of the 90s. The Riveras, the Derek Jeters, the Bernie Williams, so on and forth.
So okay? I understand, Andre. Andre, hold on a second. I understand your overall point. So essentially your problem with the Red Sox is that people aren't allowed to do their job and the fact that there is this dysfunction. I couldn't agree more with you on that because if you look at it, what you had was an argument. You had turmoil within the organization, and obviously that comes from the top when you have an ownership group that wants to have this more analytical approach, but at the same time, you have more of an old-school general manager, more of an old-school pitching coach, so you have two different things at the same place, and you don't have anyone that has, like, the most say within the organization, where it seemed like the ownership group was siding with the analytical department over the pitching coach, in the case of Daniel Lavangi, who had just won a World Series doing it his year, so it creates friction within the organization. I think that's the point you're trying to get to, essentially, right?
That is the point I'm making. Listen, I'm coming from the basketball tradition, but look, Dave Dombrowski, to me, knows his business. Alex Cora, in my mind, he knows his business. He knows what he's talking about, all right? You know, Dave Dombrowski, again, when he was the White Sox, you know, built them up. Alex Cora, obviously, coming from the Astros, they won the World Series. These guys, they're quality people. Let them handle the situation. Obviously, you just had your best season, possibly in history. They won the World Series. This year is much more tumultuous, but you have to let them ride the highs and the lows, let them make the decisions. And by ownership, especially after you just won the World Series. In conclusion, you did the same thing to Terry Francona years ago with the beer and chicken, and I wasn't happy about it then because Terry Francona is a good man. He's a good manager. You want to, you know, threw him under the bus. Now he's doing a good job in Cleveland. So this is not the first time. And the article that's been out there about how people are looking at this and saying, you know, again, I root for the home team, but you're becoming more and more like George Steinbrenner.
Fair enough. Andre, I appreciate the call, man. Fair enough. Good points. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. Now, the Red Sox are the ones that put out that story about the analytical department being at odds with Dana Lavangi, the pitching coach. I just don't understand how that looks good for the Red Sox. How does that look good for the Red Sox whatsoever that the analytical department or the analytics department and the pitching coach were at odds. I don't understand how the Red Sox benefit from that story being out there. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. They think that makes them look good, and it paints Dana Lavangie out to be the bad guy. This is what I'd look at is, and I'm not saying that Dana Lavangie did a great job with the staff, but now I have more sympathy. I'm more empathetic to Dana Lavangie because think about it. This guy just won a World Series as the pitching coach in 2018. He had an approach to how he wanted his staff to operate. That approach led the Red Sox to winning a World Series. And then the next year, the guys within the organization that wear the pocket protectors, so to speak, they're coming to Dana Lavangie and say, hey, listen, you're not doing it your way anymore. This guy's been doing it for a number of years that way. He's been studying video, et cetera. If you read Alex Spira's article, he does it a certain way. He comes up with a game plan. He comes up with a philosophy to how to pitch. And then all of a sudden, after winning the World Series, the analytical department comes to him and says, hey, we're going to change things up. We want to change the approach. And whether or not you agree with the analytical approach compared to the approach that Dana Lavangie had, the point is that you had friction within the organization because of that. And it'd be one thing if Dana Lavangie and the team sucked the previous season, and you're like, hey, you got to use some of the analytics, and you got to do this, that, and the other thing to improve the pitching staff. Okay, you can understand that. But after Dana Lavangie just goes through the postseason, they beat the Yankees, they beat the Astros, and they beat the Dodgers. And the pitching staff was absolutely tremendous. Think about that. They're going into Dana Lavangie and they're telling him, hey, they're going into his office or wherever he is. Hey, we're going to do it this way. How would you react if you're Dana Lavangie? You're thinking to yourself, what? What are we doing here? And if Dana Lavangie didn't actually believe in the approach, how is he supposed to relay that to his pitchers? If he's relaying an approach that the analytical department wants to put into the pitching staff's game plan, he doesn't believe in the approach. How is he supposed to be able to teach that to the guys? Hey, I don't really believe in this, but this is what I want you guys to do. Hey, I would rather do it this way, but the analytical department wants to do it this way. And the fact that this team was in a position where they were arguing too much between the analytic department and Dana Lavangie to the point where it cost them opportunities to coach players. It was taking time away from that. Oh, what an utter disaster. What an utter disaster. And by the way, when it comes to Alex Cora, I feel like he was let off the hook a little easy this year because everybody else, it seems like they're getting shown their walking papers. And I'm not saying Alex Cora deserves to be fired, so don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, it feels like, okay, Dave Dombrowski, everything he did was wrong. And it's like, okay, well, okay, Dave Dombrowski had a bad year. Nobody would dismiss how he handled the bullpen. But let's not forget, this guy traded for Sale, that worked. This guy traded for Eovaldi, that worked. He traded for Pierce, that worked. David Price was good in the postseason last year, right? Craig Kimbrell, he traded for him. He was a great closer for a number of years. Now, the additional signings where he signs Eovaldi after and he signs Sale after, now, those were bad. Nobody would dismiss that. Dave Dombrowski did a good job here as the Red Sox president of baseball operations for a number of years. So we shouldn't dismiss that. And it's almost as like, and Dana Lavangie, okay, last year, 2018, they won the World Series. He did a good job. And all these other guys, and I get Dana Lavangie's reassigned, whatever, but these guys are getting shown their walking papers, and it's almost like Alex Cora did nothing wrong this year. Well, let me remind you of this. He decided to, with the best team in baseball last year that had the best offense in baseball, he decided to change the lineup coming into this year. Oh, and he announced it at the winter meetings like it was this unbelievable decision by him. And we're going to switch up Andrew Benintendi and Mookie Betts. Okay, great. Why? Why? Mookie Betts was the MVP. You're changing his spot in the lineup. Okay, that made no sense. How about the fact that you look at the situation, how they came into the season, the approach to spring training with the pitching staff? What a debacle that was. And the most ironic thing about all that was, okay, the reason we're going to do this is so that at the end of the season, these guys are fresh. Price and Sale were both hurt. How about the fact that he had Chris Owings in a game when the Red Sox were still relevant and he went 0 for 5? Nobody ever heard of Chris Owings. He was DFA'd. The Royals said, this guy sucks. We don't want him. He comes to the Red Sox. They hit him leadoff in a game where they're still in the race to get a wild card. It made no sense. Well, he's a good manager, but he was not good this year. Let's not dismiss that. All right. If you want to hop on board, the number 617-779-7937. Right now, the Patriots up 28-14 over the Giants. Glenn Ordway and company will kick off the real postgame show in just a little bit. Brian Barrett with you up until then, right here on WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.